The Mark Stein Club Q&A, live around the planet, begins in 30 seconds.
Hey, this is Mark Stein. This Saturday, we're getting a little French with such epitomes of Gallic sophistication as Aretha Franklin and Willie Nelson. Plus, a cavalcade of Franco Sinatra, and disco queen Patsy Gallant gives us a tour of Paris on the town Saturday at 5 on Serenade Radio.
The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now. Here's Mark.
Hey, welcome along. July 10th, 2024. It is 3 p.m. in Washington, D.C., where an increasing number of persons are anxious to begin America's uniquely unique peaceful transfer of power a little earlier than usual. 4 p.m. in the beautiful Canadian Maritimes, 4:30 p.m. in fabulous Newfoundland, and beyond the Americas, 8 p.m. in London, where His Britannic Majesty has a new government, 9 p.m. in Paris, where they're supposed to have a new government, but do not as yet, 10 p.m. in Kyiv, where there's no possibility of a new government because Zelensky's cancelled the election, 10:30 p.m. in Tehran for all you Newfoundlanders who moved to Iran out of solidarity with the half-hour time zone, midnight 45 in Kathmandu for all you Iranians who moved to Nepal to check out the quarter-hour time zone, 3 a.m. in Singapore and Honkers, 5 a.m. in Sydney and Melbourne, 7 a.m. in Auckland, and a rather more civilized hour for the kippers and kedgeree in His Majesty's dominions across the Pacific. 300 years ago, July 10th, 1724, Eva de la Gardie, the Countess Ekeblad, was born in Stockholm. She became the first woman elected to the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences because of her experiments with potatoes. She discovered how to make starch, flour, and alcohol from spuds, and thereby reduced significantly the prevalence of famine in Sweden. So she made a greater contribution to humanity than Sir Keir Starmer or Emmanuel Macron or Joe Biden or Jacinda Trudeau or any of the other people we obsess about in our public discourse. So I just thought I'd name check her. 100 years ago, July 10th, 1924, at the Paris Olympics, Paavo Nurmi, the famous flying Finn, while still recovering from a knee injury, won both the 1500 metres and the 5000 metres, not just on the same day, but with just an hour to rest up between them. He set a new record on the 1500 metres, so for the 5000, the other guys reckoned they'd wear him out by running at full speed from the get-go. Mr. Nurmi hurled the stopwatch he used to pace himself onto the grass, galloped after them, and won. 100 years ago. We will see how this month's Paris Olympics will go a century later. French intelligence has just arrested various plotters who apparently are working for... pardon me. Strain myself on the Kyiv. They've just arrested some terrorists plotting to blow up the Olympics. The terrorists are said to be from ISIS K-pop. You remember ISIS K-pop? Nobody had ever heard of it. And then almost as soon as Kabul fell, it turned out that All the experts had been talking about them for years. That's the Paris Olympics coming up. Meanwhile, Joe Biden, he could really crush these rumours about whether he's unfit for office if he were to enter the 1500 metres and the 5000 metres. The stunning out-of-the-blue revelation that has rocked the American media. And I've got to say, I'm really impressed with the way these guys like Jake Tapper have been able... They're now doing... Jake Tapper did this hilarious deadpan comedy routine mocking Joe Biden's answers to his radio interview with Joe Scarborough. I'm amazed they can pull this off with straight faces after what they've been telling us for the last 4 years. But the stunning out-of-the-blue revelation that Joe Biden has come down with sudden advanced dementia syndrome, it can strike at any moment, you know. It continues to roil Washington, and all the experts who only last month said that his wandering off to sniff some schoolgirl's hair during the national anthem at the G7 was just, quote, cheap fakes by MAGA photoshoppers, are now turning on us sixpence, especially the New York Times, which did something they haven't done in half a century. They fact-checked a Democrat as pickily as if he were a Republican and found that Joe Biden had misstated Donald Trump's position on shooting up bleach as a surefire cure for the COVID. That's how serious the Times guys are about unloading Biden. They're correcting their own four-year-old misrepresentations of Trump. Because let's face it, where did Joe get the idea that Trump was recommending you just shoot yourself up with the bleach juice? He got it from the New York Times, which more or less took that position on it. Anyway, that seems to be... what's happening is accelerating. So it's Wednesday afternoon Eastern time now. Who knows where we will be in another 24 hours. Senior advisors to Joe Biden, don't know whether that means they hold senior positions or whether, like him, they're also seniors, but they're supposed to be meeting with Senate Democrats tomorrow. Kelly Harbison writes, I am sure many of us are watching the dramedy from the White House. Dramedy? That's a word I associate with television. It's the term they use for shows where they don't have a laugh track, but where people say funny things occasionally. It's usually the most, like in American terms, I think, it was in the days when I knew a bit about this sort of thing, but it was the most sophisticated kind of television. So I don't know whether that can really be applied to what's going on in the White House. But Kelly says, I'm sure many of us are watching the dramedy from the White House and wondering how long Joe will resist stepping down and if something, hint, hint, will be done to hasten it. Well, you know, there's a lot more leaks coming from the White House than there were just a couple of weeks ago. And I wouldn't mind betting, you know, he's dependent, entirely dependent on the people around him. I've known people who have these issues before, and it makes a lot of difference, you know, whether you shoot the juice to them at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, or if you accidentally forget and they don't get it till 10 o'clock in the evening, particularly if you're trying to get them through, say, a public occasion. So I wouldn't mind betting. If I were the Bidens, I'm not sure I'd trust anyone in that building who isn't called Biden. There are quite a lot of Bidens by the time you throw in the missus and the brother and Hunter and the other kids he still gets on with, as opposed to the ones he used to take showers with. Things are definite. I don't rule out what you say, that, you know, they'll do something to make him have an accident. You know, as I said, the leaks are getting leakier. And, you know, at a certain point, they'll start running, they'll start calling friendly journalists like Jake Tapper about an accident with the Depends or whatever. But that's because there's people now who are serious to get rid of him before the weekend. But to go back to that point, the Bidens, by which I mean not Joe, but Jill, Hunter, Jim and the rest, because it's always been a family crime syndicate, they are rumoured to be negotiating their exit, just like Ferdinand Marcos in the Philippines or the Shah in Iran. That's what all the drip, drip, drip is about. And as I said, if the Bidens are determined to dig in, as some people say, then they'll start leaking stuff that's personally embarrassing. I mean, what's impressive about this is the speed of the turnaround. Less than a month ago, don't forget, Biden's deadness was strictly a MAGA meme. And the only people who mentioned the fact that he'd just stand there frozen while everyone's dancing around him, Kamala and the rest of the gang, or when no one's around and Obama has to come back on stage and seize him and forcibly propel him off the stage. Don't forget, that was just all fake. What was it called? Cheap fakes, all this stuff. So less than a month ago, it was just this this fringe MAGA meme. Now it's in the New York Times. I mean, one reason why the right hasn't kind of overreacted to this is because they've known about this for 4 years. But don't forget, if you're a Democrat and you actually take the New York Times every day, or you listen to NPR every day, or you watch CNN every day, all of this has just come completely out of the blue, because they've never written a word about it before. This was, I thought, the day's biggest development. George Clooney, who organised that. George Clooney, many of you will be familiar with George Clooney because he's Rosemary Clooney's nephew. George Clooney, who organised that June the 15th All-Star fundraiser at which Joe froze on stage. George Clooney now says Biden was out of it then. Yeah, good of you to wait a month to let all your fellow Democrats know, George. Really good of you. But, you know, I looked at the photograph of that event and I thought, oh, my God, hasn't he aged? But that turned out to be George. Anyway, we've got a lot of questions. So Ross Spence writes, I've never been to a dinner theatre, but it must be awfully bad if it compares to the ridiculous play acting of Western politicians and media. I think this is in reference to what I said, you know, where the thing about it, after recent years, the fact that we had to spend time on the Russia investigation when there was nothing to investigate. The fact that we were subjected to COVID lockdowns for which there was no medical justification. COVID lockdowns for months and indeed for some countries, years. And then we had all, whatever it was, the monkeypox and virus X and all the rest of it. So I now tend to assume that when something is suddenly becomes the story, that it's because forces that be have decided it should be the story. That's particularly true here. You know, no one paid any attention when I was calling him the dead husk of a moth-eaten sock puppet in 2021, because it was perfect. If you watched Joe Biden, if you listened to Joe Biden, this was true in early 2021, after he won that South Carolina primary. I went off on my usual summer break from Fox News, where I tried to do some traveling and actually see what reality is like, rather than going on Fox and talking about Andrew Cuomo's dog. And so whatever that would have been, early summer of 2021, for my first for the first week of my absence, the delightful Lisa Booth was guest hosting, and Tucker's people put together a montage of me mocking stuff the incomprehensible rubbish that Joe Biden had been talking. That's now, what is 20... no, not 2021. I got that wrong. It was 2020. So that actually is over 4 years ago that all this has been perfectly obvious. Ross Spence continued, but it's, so in other words, it's only been decided that one is permitted to notice it now because that's what people want. Ross Spence continues, Orwell was right that most people can be led to put up with endless absurdities by convincing themselves they are on the good side of a struggle. That is true. That is true. There's nothing actually virtuous in signaling that you're with Biden just because he's not Trump. It's not enough for him to be not Trump. It would be helpful for him to be compos mentis or at least alive. Because otherwise bad things happen. There's no, there's nothing virtuous, for example. I saw this headline today about the Biden administration's involvement in child trafficking, which is true. Essentially, by doing what they did on the southern border, they put themselves in partnership with the child trafficking cartels. So there's nothing virtuous about the virtue signaling, but simply by designating it as such, and when you've got, you know, the Jake Tapper of 3 weeks ago and all the other guys on board with it, then you can get a away with an awful lot. Oh, and now we should mention this too. I think the George Clooney intervention is the most significant. Rob Reiner and what's the other fella? Michael Douglas have also got on board, but George Clooney is significant because he's not a joke like Rob Reiner. And he has the ear of Obama, and it's perceived that he would not have written this piece for the New York Times if Obama had not okayed it. Now, Nancy Pelosi hasn't quite done a George Clooney, but she has semi-turned on a dime, suggesting that this week with the NATO summit, and I think tomorrow's press conference is going to be what determines his fate. Well, basically, she's putting a clock on him and saying, you got a couple of days to turn this around or else, which again, you know, they go back centuries to the first years of this republic. Queen of the Jungle says, Dear Mark, hope you're getting some of that Vietnam, some of that vitamin D or vitamin D, according to where you are in the Anglosphere. Vitamin D infused summer sunshine, wherever you are these days. I'm always in favor of vitamin D or vitamin D, whichever's up there. I said this during the first weeks. There was a very interesting thing during the first weeks of the COVID thing. And I remember talking about it on Rush, you know, that there's no need for any of this. Instead of hysterically chasing the vaccine as they were then, vitamin D was shown to be effective in killing the COVID. So I'm all in favor of that. My question, says Queen of the Jungle, possibly not her real name or her real office. My question is about elections in the USA and the question of qualifications when it comes to running for office. Today, we're faced with daily catastrophes because the demo commie candidate for president is totally unqualified in just about all respects, as are most of the other politicians who run for office and succeed in getting to feed at the public trough. However, such is not the case in Realville, where you have to be tested and licensed if you want to practice many of the most common trades that people actually use. In New York, for example, it takes years of jumping through hoops if you want to become a licensed plumber, electrician, contractor, hairdresser, etc. As the wife of a licensed master plumber, I can attest to what my husband had to go through just to be able to get that accreditation. Before he could apply, he had to have worked for another licensed plumbing plumbing contractor for 7 years. Then he had to apply to take the test and pay that fee. After studying and taking classes, he then had to pay another fee to be allowed to take the test. By the way, this test is so difficult that less than 20% of plumbers pass the first time. I assure you that no senator or justice of the Supreme Court would even come close. Meanwhile, if you want to run for town supervisor, county executive, state legislator, senator, congressman, judge, even the president, there is no test, none. Think about that for a minute. The person who fixes your plumbing or cuts your hair had to pass a test and show basic qualifications to get a license, but such is not the case for our rulers. Which brings me to ask, if it was ever required that politicians had to pass a test before they could run for office, what questions should be asked? And what, in your estimation, would be the most basic qualifications that should be required, regardless of what office is being sought? I can think of a few, but would love to know your thoughts. Well, I think I said in After America, I pointed out that in the 1950s, one in 20 occupations required credentialization by the government. By the time I wrote After America, which is, I think, 12 years ago now, it was up to one in three. So I'm not general. I understand you don't want to be wheeled into the operating room and discover just about to put you under that the guy slicing you open has never been to medical school. I understand that, but I think we've got a little over credentialization crazy. And of course, what that means is that basically you can't do anything without a government permit. And when you look at some of the other trends that have manifested themselves, the Chinese social credit score or the debanking phenomenon that goes on in Britain, in Europe, and in North America, where which is a kind of social credit score, it hits you where it hurts, where if you hold the wrong views, you're not allowed to open a bank account. And as I said, that's happened in the Farage in London is the famous example, but that's happened to all kinds of people in the United States too. Suddenly they banked with, Chase Manhattan or whatever it's called this week for years. And then suddenly they just go, oh no, we're closing your account. Turns out because, they complained about the, whatever it was. So I'm not happy with giving the government control of whether or not you're able to make a living. And I would say, if anything, I take the point about the plumbing. People said that, if you remember Joe the Plumber in his famous interaction with Obama, and then the left started complaining that he wasn't a fully credentialed plumber. He doesn't have the licensed master plumber thing that your husband does. But I do not think that would be a good thing to extend to politics. The point is, we're supposed to be a society that governs itself, which means that whoever makes up our society, plumbers and farmers and accountants and choreographers, whoever makes up the generality of the population, our rulers, as you put it, are supposed to be drawn from. In France, the reality is that generally speaking, the political class is drawn from people who go to a handful of elite establishments. One of the reasons why Marine Le Pen has had a long slog towards being accepted by whatever it was earlier this week, 37% of the French electorate, is because she was perceived not to come from the officially credentialed class that supplies the political leadership of the country. But even if you don't formalize it in the way that France does, it's pretty clear. I mean, for one thing, There's insufficient social mobility in the United States now, which is the definition of the American dream. The American dream says that's the point of the American dream. You get off the boat at Ellis Island, you're a peasant, your father was a peasant, your grandfather was a peasant, your great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, he was a peasant. And you didn't want to be a peasant, so you came to America, because the peasant can wind up running a successful business. And then his kid will go to medical school and become a doctor. And that's the idea of them. And increasingly, there's less and less social mobility. How you're born increasingly determines where you'll get to in life. And I think that's one of the huge problems with the political class, that they are a class, increasingly a class apart. That's one thing they don't like about Trump. He's not from within the group that they think should govern the nation. So I certainly don't want to see that trend accelerate at all. And even if you were to entertain it for a moment, for example, Biden would meet that test, because he's been in Washington since, I think, 2 years after the War of 1812. So he has, because he's done nothing else with his life except politics, he's regarded as being an expert in it. That's how he talks. That's how he thinks of himself. That's why he thinks he should serve 2, 3, 7 terms as president. And I don't think that's the way it works. I think I mentioned somewhere or other this week, what's really disturbed me is we've accepted the idea that these people are a class apart. I think Macron was unusual in that, I mean, for a start, the phenomenon that manifests itself in America, where the wife of the previous president or the brother and son of the previous presidents should be regarded as grandfathered in qualification-wise, is terrible. Then you have this thing where people you've never heard of until, you know, 10 minutes before the election, like Emmanuel Macron. Suddenly the political class decides, oh, yeah, oh, by the way, Emmanuel Macron, vote for that guy, he's going to be the one. Then it gets worse. Rishi Sunak, yeah, he lost the leadership election, but the qualified political people, the qualified persons have decided that he should be prime minister. So the person who won the election is being booted out. Likewise here, the reason for Biden as the dead husk of a moth-eaten sock puppet is because the qualified people decided you don't really need, you know, you can go through the rituals of it, you can make a whistle stop tour, you can kiss a few babies if you insist, but let's face it, it is just lame-o dinner theatre, and it's delivered us to a very bad place, the post-democratic age, as I've said, and I don't think we should be doing anything else to make these guys a class apart. Georges Pazin, or George Pazin, as he says, I've made him an honorary Purlen, Quebecer de souche. Georges says, hi Mark, hope you're feeling better. We're all praying for you, mostly because we selfishly want you around. Have you obeyed Senile Joe's tweet and Googled Project 2025? Apparently Project 2025 is an attempt to implement The Handmaid's Tale, at least according to our wonderful, objective, unbiased media. When I Googled Project 2026, I was sent to a site to purchase the last copier in North America. I've had no luck convincing anyone around me that we are losing our country. I hope you have better luck. Thanks for all you do. Yeah, this is in reference to a tweet that Joe Biden, to show that he's completely on top of things, and that he can hold his own vigorously, as opposed to holding a 12-year-old girl's hair and tweaking her nipples or whatever he's doing on that video. Joe Biden made a five-second video telling anyone that, you know, if Trump comes back, it's Project 2025. Google it. I don't know. I'd never heard of Project 2025. But it looks like they're going to amp it up to be this season's QAnon or whatever. And they're going to try and scare people, or certainly... Biden has been forced into scaring people, saying, oh, look, Trump may be ahead. The Cook Political Report moved six states today in the Trump direction. You know, in other words, away from likely Biden, out of the likely Biden camp and towards Trump. And they include my own state, New Hampshire, which, as I said last week, I'm not sure I really believe. But at this stage, you know, if you're the sort of person who can have your vote changed by something that you hadn't heard of until Biden mentions it in a five-second video, because if he goes 7 seconds, he starts talking gibberish. If that's enough reason to change your vote, then you deserve to lose your country. It's unfair for your neighbours because Mrs. Smith might deserve to lose her country, but Mr. and Mrs. Jones next door don't. But that's the way it works when you have self-governing nations. You have to be able to take the last 4 years and what's happened seriously. And I'll get to me, you know, Biden is ludicrous now. He told a Pennsylvania woman who said she liked dark Brandon. Maybe this is why he's brought up Project 2025. He told a Pennsylvania woman earlier today that dark Brandon is back. You know, dark Brandon, you know, it's... There's only two guys who run for president on major party tickets. And Biden is the Democrat nominee because millions of Democrats voted him into that position. The Democrats are now doing what they did in the early hours of Wednesday morning in November 2020. They're now doing it to their own base, to their own primary voters. Biden's the Democrat nominee because millions of Democrats voted him to be the Democrat nominee. And now George Clooney is saying, oh, yeah. And Rob Reiner saying, yeah. You're nice, all you little guys. But listen, the non-little guys have had a think about it. And unfortunately, we got to nullify your votes. And, you know, there's not a lot of evidence by that. I mean, a third of viewers, according to one poll I saw, think he won that debate. you know, so the fact that suddenly the House organs of the party are willing to run these stories doesn't mean anything except that there's a palace coup underway. And the obvious question remains, you know, if Joe Biden is not fit to be president on January 20th, 2025, he's not fit to be president now. So if they decide he's got to go, then Kamala's got to be running as an incumbent because she's got to, you know, if he's got some dementia that's slated to get worse on January 20th, 2025, I'd be interested to hear a medical opinion on the idea that it can be put on hold for the next 6 months. No serious person genuinely believes that he's been the chief executive of the United States for 3.5 years. So I ask again, who actually has been chief executive of the United States? Because once you figure that out, you're more likely to get a handle on where this soap opera's headed. And incidentally, if you do want to save your country, and you're very close to the end for that. I'm not making any, you know, foreign gloating point here, because if you look at every Western nation with one or two exceptions, they're all going off the cliff. I'm not putting down your constitutional republic, because the constitutional monarchies like Canada are going off the cliff. And other not quite so constitutional, or more transiently constitutional republics, like France's Fifth Republic, are also going off the cliff. It's no, so there's no point. The point here, as I began, as I said at the beginning, is they're arranging a peaceful transfer of power. You know that uniquely unique American thing, which other kind. Well, as we saw in the United Kingdom, they manage it in 24 hours, but in the United States, it takes 3 months just so they can subvert the incoming administration. They want to do the peaceful transfer of power now. That's theater. Meanwhile, the destruction of your country goes on. The mayor of New York, Eric Adams, Democrat, ding, 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 announced today. He's, you know, these people are, oh, yeah, I know Joe Biden. Well, I've known Joe for half a century. He's a great patriot and he always does the. He's my friend. I love him. He always does the right thing. The mayor of New York, Eric Adams, Democrat, announced today he's giving taxpayer-funded debit cards. And by the way, these will be whatever state you live in, you'll be funding these debit cards because apparently he has an agreement with Joe Biden or the Biden administration, whoever runs that, that after the election's in the bag, there's going to be billions of dollars for these Democrat cities that proclaim themselves sanctuary cities and then are surprised when millions of illegal immigrants show up. But Eric Adams has just announced he's giving taxpayer-funded debit cards to thousands of illegal migrants in New York City. That's the point. You know, don't let the obsession with the soap opera distract you from the fact, in the United Kingdom, the Conservatives were wiped out and Labour have got in. So that means that millions and millions and millions of illegal migrants will continue to arrive in Britain every year. You know, don't let the soap opera, don't let what they're arranging now distract you from the fact that you ought to be mad about the policies. Look at the last 4 years. Look at how lockdown. Talk to any of your neighbours, the mom and pop businesses who weren't allowed to operate their hair salons and diners. And now they're told they have to give thousands of dollars in free debit cards to people who just walked across the southern border at Joe Biden's behest. I mean, I don't know why people aren't burning down City Hall in New York City. You know, at a certain point, if you're not prepared to get mad, well, there's no point following the soap opera if you're not getting mad at what the soap opera implements. Okay, I'm getting too excited, and I never like to do that. I generally like to be mellow and soporific in keeping with my easy listening music show. So let's pause from the passing Charivari. And, you know, I said about the music, by the way, we've moved it all out of this show and over to 7AID Radio, Saturdays at 5 p.m. London time, in order to free up more time here to talk about Mitch McConnell and Nikki Haley. However, Joe Bonsall died yesterday of Lou Gehrig's disease. They've changed the name of that. I can't remember the new name now, but Lou Gehrig's disease as was. For half a century, Joe Bonsall was the tenor with the Oak Ridge Boys. He followed me on Twitter and he retweeted and liked quite a lot of my tweets. And I used to do jokes about the Encyclopedia of Conservative Celebrities. It's a single sheet of paper printed on one side only with Pat Boone at the top of the page and Joe Bonsall underneath. But in fact, I think there was more than one Oak Ridge Boy partial to me. I think Joe converted at least two of the other three. Anyway, gratifying as that is, that's all by the by. Joe Bonsall helped power truly the golden age of the Oak Ridge Boys when they had hit after hit after hit. Their harmonies were terrific. And they all shared the load. As I said, he was the tenor in the group. This is a song pertinent to the occasion, looking back to their gospel roots and forward to old friends who have gone ahead to the next life.
There's a brand new star up in heaven tonight, shining down on us, glorious and bright. I'm gonna miss you every day, but I know that you're all right. There's a brand new star up in heaven tonight. There's a peace in my heart, finally moving on, a calm in my conscience that sings. Let the love shine down.
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 Let the love shine down. I'm gonna miss you every day, but I know that you're all right. There's a brand new star up in heaven tonight.
There's a break in the clouds. The sun is shining through. Speaks to my soul in a voice that sounds like you. When I lay my head down and gently close my eyes,
there's a brand new star up in heaven tonight.
Let the love shine down.
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 Let the love shine down. I'm gonna miss you every day, but I know that you're all right. There's a brand
shine down.
Let the love 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 shine down. I'm gonna miss you every day, but I know that you're all right. There's a brand new star up in heaven tonight. I'm gonna miss you every day, but I know that you're all right. There's a brand new star up in heaven.
There's a brand new star up in heaven tonight. That's a song written by Aaron Reitier and Mando Saints, performed by the Oak Ridge Boys. And we played it in memory of the tenor boy who sang with them for half a century, Joe Bonsall, dead at the age of 76. We are live around the planet. It is 19 to 4 North American Eastern Time. That's 19 to 9 British Summer Time. A little behind, a lot ahead, according to where you chance to be on this turbulent Earth. Let's get back to your questions. Oh, we got a question here about music from David Kelly Wood, who says, Mark, if you have already spoken of the passing of the Yeah Yeah Girl, Françoise Hardy, at age 80 last month. Apologies for missing it. I fell for her when she appeared in the great auto racing film Grand Prix in 1966 alongside James Garner and Yves Montand, and only more than four decades later learned that she had been far better known as a singer, songwriter, and model than as an actress, and so became a fan all over again through YouTube music videos. I wonder, did you ever meet her? Or have an opportunity to interview her? I did meet her in, this would be the late 80s. Might be a little earlier, but my memory is the late 80s when she was married to a fellow called Jacques Dutronc. And for some reason, a mutual friend had decided to introduce us to each other for a reason that was completely preposterous. I didn't care for Monsieur Dutronc's music at all. I think he's still out there doing stuff. But I very much did for Françoise Hardy, what you call the Yeah Yeah Girl. Yeah Yeah is a style of Franco-pop. That is a sort of agreeably girly rock and roll. named because rock and roll, it was felt after She Loves You, Yeah, 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 that saying yeah, yeah a lot was what people did in rock and roll songs. But she was actually much better than that. And she survived, and she did all kinds of other songs too. The only reason I haven't done a big Françoise Hardy special is because at Serenade Radio, Steve James, who does a show on Saturday nights, Late Night Extra, which is 11 p.m. London time, so that's 6 p.m. in New York, 3 p.m. in Los Angeles, he does a show where he plays a lot of Françoise Hardy, and so I felt there were people who sort of were entitled to have first crack at Françoise Hardy, as it were. But I, as I said, I had a lovely dinner with her, whatever it was, 35, 40 years ago, and I would I'll let it percolate and maybe play a couple of things. But thank you for asking that question, David. The great Françoise Hardy, treat yourself and do what David did and pull up Google around, and instead of Googling Project 2025, Google Françoise Hardy. You won't regret it. James says, Mark, not sure if you keep up on Canadian poultry news, but KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken, has made all of its Ontario locations halal and removed pork products from the menu with the plan to roll things out nationally. Is this a win for capitalism or Islamism? It's a win for the future, James. If you look at the way the Muslim population has increased in Canada, and I think something like 60% of Canadian Muslims live in Ontario, and that means there's only going to be more of them in 5 years' time and even more of them in 10 years' time. And you won't really this is a chain. They don't want to have to make different rules for Thunder Bay or Elliott Lake than they do for Brantford or Mississauga. And Mississauga, by the way, I think if my memory serves, Colonel Sanders of Kentucky Fried Chicken fame actually lived there for a while. So I don't know what he'd make of this. But this isn't a victory for capitalism or for Islam. It's a victory for the future, because the future, as someone said 2 decades ago, belongs to those who show up. And the people who showed up in Canada, as in much of the Western world, are Muslims. And I'll tell you something else, too, that if you don't want, because, you know, if you profess, wear a PETA on whatever they're called, PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. You know, there's a lot of aspects of halal compliant slaughter, for example, with chickens, that would be if you, and I'm not a vegetarian or a vegan or anything like that. I'm rather relaxed about, I don't like all these plans. I think Sir Keir Starmer has plans to ban foie gras. But if you do purport to be concerned, as PETA do, this should disturb you. That's really, by the way, why Brigitte Bardot, since we're looking back to the heyday of Franco chickies, Françoise Hardy was still an icon when she died. Brigitte Bardot is just, you know, Islamophobe Brigitte Bardot dies because she takes animal rights seriously, and so she objected to the halal slaughter. But it doesn't matter anyway, because first they do this, you know. You may not be Muslim, but you're going to have to eat Muslim-compliant food. Because as we've seen, not just with Kentucky Fried Chicken, I don't eat that. I haven't been in a... I've been parked outside when persons I've been with have expressed an interest in getting some KFC or PFK, as they call it in Quebec. But I've had no desire to eat there in... I think that dinner I had with Françoise, I've had dinner with Françoise Hardy more recently than I've been in a KFC. So it's none to me. But here's the point. First, what happens is that the strictures of Islam are applied to you. You may be some weedy Anglican or Presbyterian or whatever, doesn't matter. The strictures of Islam apply to you now. Not just when it comes to Kentucky Fried Chicken, but also when it comes to things like freedom of expression, or when it comes to, for example, displaying great historical renditions, illustrations of Muhammad from Dante's Inferno or whatever, if you're writing a scholarly textbook for an American university press. It doesn't matter what it is. You're not a Muslim, but you live in a society where the strictures of Islam apply to all. And then comes the next stage. It always does. You know, we apparently, I think 2,000 Jews have, since the French election, the triumph of the anti-Semitic left, have applied to emigrate from France and move to Israel. Be the same thing in Montreal. I say in Montreal, McGill is moving to shut down the big protests downtown. There won't be any Jews in Montreal. The guys like this horse feathers guy, I was up before his committee. He's a Liberal MP. He's stunned that his fellow Liberal MPs don't. He's a Jew whose family has been in Montreal going back to the 19th century. And it doesn't count for anything because they've run the arithmetic and they've figured out that the future is with Islam. So you get on board with the future. You don't have any choice but to get on board with the future, because the future belongs to those who show up, and what showed up was Islam. So then we get to the next stage, which, just as it's, as I often talk about, when I go to Tangiers or when I go to Alexandria, when you go to Baghdad, in places where once were Jews, now there are none. And it doesn't, it's not just the Jew thing either. If you go to Alexandria, for example, there used to be the Alexandria Quartet by Lawrence Durrell, which is a pretty great read, because he's writing about Alexandria the way it used to be, when it was a big, jostling, so-called, as we would now say, multicultural city. There were the Egyptians, and there were the British, and there were the Greeks, and there were Muslims, and there were Christians, and there were Jews, and there was even quite a thriving gay community. And then, in the last half century, since Islam took hold, everybody else has gone. And Islam winds up king on a field of corpses. And that will be as true in Western cities as it has proved in Tangiers and in Alexandria and in Baghdad and anywhere else. That's just the way it is. Let's see what we've got. Elisa Angel says, did you know that the Catholic Basilica of Saint-Denis in Paris is the first Gothic structure ever built? It was completed in 1144. Now it is a predominantly Muslim neighborhood. Would it surprise you to learn that 22 years ago I was warned not to go visit the Basilica because the neighborhood would be uninviting to someone of my Catholic heritage? I went anyway 22 years ago. I didn't linger in the area. I wouldn't go today. I get cranky. I visited that. I get cranky sometimes when, you know, I've wasted... I feel so sad because I wrote a book that has proved correct, except in one respect. And it was such an arresting thesis that, as always, I was invited in by princes, presidents and prime ministers to talk about it with them. And then none of them did anything. But actually, I've been to the Saint-Denis when I was a child. I don't quite know. I think it was a friend of my mother's or something. A Belgian friend of my mother's who was living near there. Anyway, I hadn't really much thought about Saint-Denis. And then I chanced to be, I'm sure I mentioned this before on this show, that the root of my book on demography, America Alone, came about because in the spring of 2002, so 22 years ago, like you, Elisa, I decided I should do a quick fact-finding tour of the Middle East. And because all those places are fairly grim places that you don't, you know, you're not looking forward to, I thought I'd treat myself to a couple of weeks in Europe beforehand. And as I always say, the bit I often mention is that I was waiting for a friend across the street from a maternity shop in Vienna. And I noticed that all the women coming out of the maternity shop were covered. And that was Vienna, Austria. But I also was in Paris, and by then I knew about les banlieues. And I asked somebody about it. What do you mean, les banlieues? And he goes, well, places like Saint-Denis. I mean, and I said, oh, wait a minute. You mean Saint-Denis, where all the French kings are buried? And Charles the Hammer, Charles Martel, he's buried there too. Supposedly his remains are there. Yeah, that's Saint-Denis. So I took a taxi out to the Basilica of Saint-Denis. I may say something like the first three cab drivers didn't want to go there. They just weren't interested. It was not part of their world anymore. But I went there and I saw it. And then I went back, I think, in 2016, just to see for myself how the situation had deteriorated. And if the remains of Charles Martel, the Hammer, were to exit the Basilica, they would conclude, or any tourist would conclude, oh, that Charles Martel, the Hammer guy, he must have lost at the Battle of Tours. He must have lost, and the Muslims just swept all the way into Paris and took Saint-Denis. You know, I'm getting cranky because this didn't need to happen. And I don't even blame the Muslims for it, actually, because if you could take France, wouldn't you want to take France? Those Frenchy guys, they did a pretty good job of building up the place. But if they're not interested in keeping it, and they're willing to just give it to you, why wouldn't you let them give it to you? So I blame the Western political class, and I get particularly upset now because by the time of the 20th anniversary of America Alone in 2026, it will be too late to save these countries. Chris Davis says, Mark, following the collapse of the so-called conservative vote, down 50% on 2019, leaving them with 121 MPs, one might expect that they would learn the lesson that being conservative wins votes and being pinko trans-friendly social democrats does not, given the full fat alternative on offer from Sir Niels Starmer. And then you look at the shadow cabinet, which is wetter than Ed Davey at a water park. I should explain for non-UK listeners that Sir Ed Davey is the leader of the Liberal Democrats, and his entire campaign, which worked out very well for his party, was to just go to water parks and, you know, get on a slide or do a big belly flop into some huge pool of water, whatever. The Tories really are determined to hit all the icebergs until they sink the One Nation ship, aren't they? The only question remaining is, does Reform UK have the heft, political intellect and organisational skills to fill the vacuum on the right of British politics, noting that by the time of the next general election, we will be even less likely to be able to vote our way out of the mess we will be in than we were last week. Most people who go into politics, and again, this goes back to what I was talking earlier about one of the problems with a permanent political class, you know, is people who, like all the people, all the Tories who lost their seats, what are they going to do now? Most of them aren't good at doing anything but politics, which is not a high-skill job, nor should it be, because the thing about being an MP is it actually shouldn't be. Again, this is going back to the question I was asked earlier about should we require credentials for politics or whatever. No, because the point about politics is to have the smallest size state you need. to ensure that you're not invaded and people can get from outlying towns to the capital city and what have you. A few functions. And that's why being a member of parliament and voting on those few functions isn't something that should require a lot of training and nor a full week. But the minute you have the size of state now, which massively expanded, by the way, under those five useless so-called FACO conservative prime ministers who wasted 14 years accelerating all the Blairite trends, is that once you have a state that size, it's a full-time gig, politics, and it attracts the kind of people you would expect. And the pendulum, because we still have the democratic dinner theatre, where, oh, every so often the pendulum swings, so we give the other guys a turn this time, then that means that you have all these awful third-rate people who can't do anything else, who've never done anything else, particularly now, you know, when you look at what Conservative Central Office was doing in the couple of weeks before the election. You know, some guy who's been a staffer to the Lord Privy Seal gets parachuted into a safe seat or whatever. At least America has open primaries where anybody who wants to be the Republican nominee or the Democrat nominee can have a go at it. I'm getting too cranky here. I'm getting exhausting myself. But the point about that is then you've lost your seat. So your whole thing then is to monetize the fact that you were the member for Little Pidlington on the Marsh for 3 years or whatever it was. And so naturally, you're not going to be someone who's going to take on something difficult, whether it's ending mass immigration or questioning the COVID narrative. Look at Andrew Bridgen, a very popular guest on the Mark Steyn Show and an honourable person. He didn't do anything except note that there were large numbers of people, he's met them, I've met them, who were injured or bereaved by these vaccines. And he also noted that what we were told at the time of the introduction of these vaccines, which were entirely unnecessary, was that they were 100% safe and effective. So he showed some courage. And what happened in his constituency, he was kicked out. First, he was kicked out of the Tory party, and then he was kicked out of his job as MP. It's too difficult. It's asking too much to expect people to be courageous and principled. And as a result, that's what we end up with. So however spineless you think Kentucky Fried Chicken is in agreeing to suddenly turn Ontario all halal, it's only going to get worse because there isn't a lot of courage in Parliament. And the Tory party isn't going to suddenly discover courage. I can't even get over the people they're talking for the next Tory leader. Now, you ask about Reform UK. Nigel had a very good night, certainly in terms of, they've worked out, they did the arithmetic and they decided, and they figured out that if he'd got another, I think, 380,000 votes, he would now be the leader of the opposition. So that's fantastic. If he sticks at it, and if he does something that he hasn't actually done before in all the various parties that he's headed, They're basically one-man shows. He heads the party. Sometimes he achieves what they set out to achieve, as he did with UKIP and as he did with Brexit. And then he steps down from the party and the party collapses. There's still a UKIP. My friend Lois Perry, do you remember Lois? She used to be on the Steyn Show a lot. She was always a great guest. There was a little dweeby fella from The Spectator she beat the crap out of on climate change. We always loved having Lois on. She was UKIP's leader. She was appointed to lead UKIP into the election. She lasted a month. and some other guy took them into the election. They didn't do anything. So he hasn't done what Marine Le Pen has done with the national rally, the Rassemblement National. He hasn't done what Geert Wilders has done. He hasn't yet demonstrated that he can build a party that is more than just his own personal vehicle. So the easy thing for him to do for the next 5 years is he can, you know, particularly these next few months, if they're really serious about having Sunak stay on as a leader of the Tories for 6 months, no one wants to hear from Sunak at Prime Minister's Questions. So if at question, you know, so there's a great opportunity for Nigel there just to steal the show and make all the running when he's permitted to ask a question. And he did that very effectively in the European Union. But if you're serious about saving the country, you can't do it as a one-man show. It's the same as GB News, you know. GB News, that guy, whatever he's called, Floppidopoulos, he said to me that on our first conversation, you can't build a channel around Nigel Farage. Eventually, he decided that was the cheapest option because you'd pay Nigel and you could pay all the losers tuppence halfpenny. But it didn't work out for GB News. And it's not going to work out unless Nigel this time builds a party that outlasts him. But the Tories aren't going to learn their lessons. No question about that. Bill Bradshaw says, Mark, it's great to hear you sounding so well lately. I feel actually pretty terrible. The biggest news I've heard from Sir Keir Starmer is that the deportations to Rwanda are dead. Too bad. There is a somewhat thriving Albanian community in my hometown of St. Petersburg, Florida. So if any of those Albanian refugees are trying to make it to the USA, they had a much better chance of immigrating from Rwanda than from the UK. How long do you think it will take the UK to become a bleep hole country? And then their immigration applications will sail through the system, says Bill. Yeah, it's amazing how many places all over the map have Albanian communities. When we were on the Mark Steyn cruise, the Mark Steyn Adriatic cruise, we went to some fabulous, we started from Trieste and we put in at Croatia and Montenegro. I went, when we were sailing past Albania, I thought I'd go on deck and wave to all the Albanians on the beach, but the place was deserted because in the last 15 years, 10% of the Albanian male population has moved to the United Kingdom. Jeff Estes says, Hi Mark, would like to know your thoughts on the future of the hard right parties in the UK, specifically the leadership of His Majesty's Loyal Opposition, aka Tories, and Reform. Can Reform and Conservatives work together, or are the two diametrically opposed? Reform Party seems to project only one leader, Nigel. Not sure who'll be the con leader. Take care, Jeff. Do you really care? I mean, even before all these people lost their seats, do you really care whether it's, you know, Penny Mordaunt, or what was that guy called, Tugend Hat, or Rory Stewart? Here's what I've been saying now for 20 years. You can't have conservative government in a liberal culture. One reason why the Conservatives are total squishes when it comes to all the LGBT QWERTY stuff, for example, when it comes to the mutilation of children, is because the culture has... So when everything else has gone so nuts to the stage that bodily mutilation of adolescent children, rendering them scarred and infertile, is praised. There's no point obsessing whether Rory Stewart or Penny Mordaunt winds up leading the Conservative. This is not where your this is not where the future is made. Just to come back, because it was a great line of mine, and I should have put it on a T-shirt so more people would remember it. The future belongs to those who show up. So the most consequential decision about Canada's future this week was the decision in Ontario by Kentucky Fried Chicken to go all halal, right? By the way, that's, do you like bacon? Tough. You ain't going to be getting it at Kentucky Fried Chicken. It's real, this stuff. You know, certain things, worrying about freedom of speech is an abstraction. But freedom of bacon, that's very real. Used to be real to people. But a lot of them are willing to walk rasher. And by the way, in America, you know what they call it in America? They call it Canadian bacon. Because that's how Canadian it is. Unless you're in Ontario. And that's how you walk into darkness. One rasher of Canadian bacon at a time. Is that this is truly pathetic, some of this stuff. Scott Scherzer says, "Dear Mark, whether it be continental Europe, Great Britain, or the United States, does it even matter anymore which party or person wins an election? It seems to me that the structural bureaucracies in all of these locales are truly in charge, and that any hope of reform will take generations. As the youth throughout the Western world has been educated to despise their heritage, and the West continues to import people from cultures antithetical to our traditional ways, the odds seem slim that whatever centre still remains will hold. I hope things are going better for you in the King's Court than in the fetid swamp that is the US justice system. Please take good care of yourself." Yeah, is the what the Democrats are doing right now and hope to have completed over the weekend is what people like. They want the soap opera. So they want to have the sense that things have changed. One of the interesting things is, I found both the British and the French elections, the idea that you have the simulacrum of change, but in the end it's completely meaningless. And now the Democrats within their own party are hoping to do the same thing themselves. Now, as we've discussed before, it's very difficult for it to be for Joe Biden to be succeeded by anyone other than Kamala Harris, simply because it's too in the Democrat Party for a white man to displace a black woman, which is what Gavin Newsom would have to do, for example. That just isn't going to fly. That would cause them more problems than keeping Joe Biden in place. But the point about that, that's where identity politics comes in. That's where they say, oh, this is great. We've got the first non-binary president or whatever. And that's fantastic. What's the point if everything that's killing your country just go, oh, it's great, we got rid of the old white guy and now we've got a black woman, and everything's just as crap as before, and you're on the same trajectory over the cliff, which is where this thing heads out. Eric Dale says, "Mark and fellow club members, what are your thoughts on the Western media's, shall we say, Scarborian ability to say obviously false things with a straight face while ignoring matters that will have real consequences, even for our betters, presumably? For example, the BRICS club," this is the post-dollar club, really, that's the best term for it, "continues to expand with Thailand and Malaysia signalling their interest." They're both serious countries, by the way. I think back to Eric Bolling when I was guest hosting Hannity on the day, very convenient, I think it was the day that After America was published, and as a promotional tie-in, Moody's downgraded the United States credit rating. And so Norway and New Zealand still had their perfect credit scores, and America was somewhere down there. And Eric Bolling, who they put up for me to interview, he subsequently had to leave Fox for something to do with emailing pictures of penises to people. Anyway, Eric Bolling. So I'm interviewing Eric Bolling, and he goes, "No way, New Zealand. We shouldn't even be on the same list of rankings as these rinky-dink countries. They're not real countries. America shouldn't be on the same league table with them." You know, he was great. That was fantastic. I said, "Oh, so it should be like the World Series? It's like no other countries in it, or the what's it called, the Super Bowl?" Anyway, here's the thing: the expansion of the BRICS Club means something. Will the overthrow of the U.S. dollar, says Eric Dale, begin with a trickle followed by a deluge while we distract ourselves with pointless trivia? This is an alternative to the dollar. It's a post-dollar financial regime. Now, the only reason America can afford to be the brokest nation in history and to run up all these multi-trillion dollars in debt is because the dollar is the global currency, and so their debt is denominated. That's the only difference between America and Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe has to pay back its debt in US dollars. So the fact that you debauch your own currency doesn't help you, because you have to pay your debt back in real money. And Thailand, I know Eric Bolling would think they were just rinky-dink joke countries like Norway and New Zealand, but Thailand and Malaysia are serious countries. And it's just, if the BRICS thing continues to expand, it will be, you know, as the old line says, gradually, then suddenly. And one day, and this is the way it's headed, because nobody in Washington, as you say, we talk about trivia, and nobody in Washington in either party has any plans to arrest the pileup of debt. They don't even talk about it when they talk about raising the debt ceiling. The trick is always to raise the ceiling, right? Trick is always to raise the ceiling. Never try to cease piling up debt. And so it's going to be that one day you'll just wake up in the morning and it'll be the equivalent of seeing a mushroom cloud on the horizon, that the dollar has died overnight and your house and your 401k and all that, it's all gone. It's all gone. I told you, we usually try to work up to a happy ending. I don't know. Do we have any happy ending type questions? Oh, I see Jojo from Texas wants me to start, just as we call Hong Kong honkers, wants me to call Bangkok bonkers. And as we just had that Thailand question, the point the Thais would make is that the bonkers ones are in Washington. Anyway, I wish I was, you know, I honestly, if I had my life to live all over again, I'd have another dinner with Francoise Hardy. This has been Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A across the planet. You want some music tough? We've moved all that to Saturdays. Serenade Radio, 5 p.m. London time. That's 6 p.m. in Western Europe, 12 noon North American Eastern. Hope you'll join me this weekend when we shall storm the Bastille, musically speaking, but with a side trip to Vanuatu. That's going to do it for today. Stick with Stein Online for our regular Thursday date with Laura's Links. Laura Rosen-Cohen will round up the internet as only she can. And on Friday, we shall have a brand new tale for our time. If you're still toying with the pros and cons of joining the Mark Stein Club, come on in, the water's fine. And don't forget, for the Stein shy chum in your life, there's a Mark Stein Club gift membership with his or her name on it. Stay safe, stay free, stay well, stay out of court.
Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. rights reserved.